Support from Hanson Gress, seeking curious people who like technology, network engineering, and customer support. Opportunities for those who thrive on problem solving. Details at hansongress.com/careers.
Shawa, Tuxknusum, Salama. Thank you and welcome to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, your public media station. I'm Boston Christopher. You can also watch us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. Today, the 51st Annual Alaska Folk Festival is just about here. We've got a preview plus a chat with Paige Sparks about the documentary film on the 50th Annual, or basically 50 years of Folk Fest, which premieres tonight at the Gold Town. The Marie Darlin Prize nominations are open for 2026. And tomorrow they're going to celebrate the 2025 winner. What does it take to win this award? We chat with past winners about their experience. And Project Homeless Connect is next Tuesday, April 7th. We chat with the organizers of this event, from the Juno Coalition on Housing and Tlingit and Haida connecting services to those in need. Those conversations are coming up this hour on Juno Afternoon. And a special programming note, join us in the studio live next week for a special Juno Afternoon on Friday, April 10th. The show will feature the guest dance band of the folk festival, the Red Hots. Bring your dancing shoes. Arrive by 2:45 in the studio downstairs here at KTOO on Friday, April 10th. And speaking of Folk Fest, let's take a peek and a listen to the documentary film trailer, the teaser, the sizzle reel that premieres tonight at the Gold Town, chronicling 50 years of the Folk Fest.
When a bunch of misfits get together and make music, it feels right.
A huge lineup of dorks who are all feeling cool at the same time.
It inspired me to play music.
Music gives all of us a way to feel the most basic human emotions.
The Alaska Folk Festival is the perfect Mongolian model, so it'll never run out of power.
Yeah, you're listening to Juno Afternoon at Studio 2K from KTOO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. That was the trailer for the documentary film 50 Years of Folk Fest, which premieres tonight at the Gold Town Nick. It's sold out. Of course it is. It's a fundraiser, and it's already sold out. But there will be additional screenings on Saturday, April 11th, downstairs here at KTOO. And the 51st Annual Folk Fest begins this Monday, April 6th. Can you believe it? There's still snow on the ground. What's going on? A week of live music, workshops, guest artists, and more. And here to get us tuned up for the week are Annie Bartholomew, board member and musician. How are you today, Annie B?
Wonderful. Thanks, Boston.
Excellent. I also have Megan Chambers, who's listed here as the vice president, merch and design queen. Gunathjish, how are you today?
Good. Thanks for having us.
Good. And then we also have, visiting us from out of town, but used to be at Juno White, the wonderful filmmaker and awesome person, Paige Sparks, co-producer, director, and cinematographer for the film 50 Years of Folk Fest. Gunathjishwasiyati, how are you today, Paige?
Doing good. Thanks, Boston.
It's so great to have you back. When did you get into town?
Last night at about 2 a.m.
Oh,
so,
man.
I'm feeling it today.
So you're feeling it. But we got this lovely sun. It's like so nice out.
I brought it all the way from Colorado.
We appreciate that. We need it. Can you make this snow melt now?
Yeah, if I could bring some of that home with me, actually. We could really use
some. You can have it. You can have it. We've had enough.
That's what I hear.
Okay, so let's start with you in this film that's premiering tonight. So you chronicled 50 years of Folk Fest. Last year was the 50th anniversary. So tell me a little bit about how the film came about.
Yeah. This is actually the brainchild of Josh Fortenberry. He approached me probably a year before the 50th being like, hey, I really want to chronicle this. This is an important event, and put together the funds to make it happen. So flew up last year and spent about, I don't know, 10 days filming all sorts of interviews, doing a lot of running around, finding all the jam circles at 2 and 3 a.m. to make sure that we really made this feel like the most authentic version of Folk Fest that you would get. And I was so honored because this is such an important event for Juneau and the other communities, but mostly because if it weren't for Annie here sitting next to me, I wouldn't have played Folk Fest myself. And she really encouraged me to play music on stage for the first time. And that has since launched a lot of now musical parts of my life that I wouldn't have had otherwise. So this festival just makes such deep impacts. And I learned that throughout the process of interviewing. And it was an honor to film that.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, is what did you discover by, I mean, I know a lot of times the documentarian doesn't put themselves in the film or anything that's very, you know, third person or whatever. But yeah. What did you discover filming that documentary?
The most important discovery I think that I was I kind of knew but wasn't fully prepared for was it's one of like the best social anti-capitalist movements that I've seen really last for 50 years. And talking to some of the founders and just strongholds who have kept this going, it's such a beautiful way that you can share art without monetizing it. And the purpose of that movement in the lens of folk music just expands outward. And it's really rare as a documentarian that you get to make a feel-good piece and you get to make a piece that makes people want to then be inspired to create. And there's something special about every time I left the edit bay, I picked up my guitar and I started playing music because it's just so transformative in that way.
Now, you called the film 50 Years of Folk Fest and you mentioned talking to some of the founders. So you were both chronicling the 50th year but also looking back a little bit, yeah?
Yeah, and I mean, it is mostly kind of like a how did Folk Fest become and what can people who maybe didn't know about some of the founders or some of these like early events learn. So it really is a 50-year history and overview of Folk Fest. But really, at the end of the day, it's all about trying to encapsulate that feeling that you get when you walk in those doors for those who maybe haven't experienced it.
And what's the shelf life? Obviously, we talked about Gold Town Tonight sold out. It's a fundraiser for the Folk Festival because this is something that's put on for free. It's supported by memberships and fundraisers like this and the concert you did last fall, things like that. And it's also, it doesn't cost, and the musicians don't get paid, right? So everybody's getting their 15 minutes of fame on the main stage. And so it's such a great community event. So I'm just curious, though. So after tonight, Gold Town, and then next Saturday, April 11th, 1:30 and 3 p.m. downstairs here at K2O, there'll be a screening of it. And Paige used to work here at K2O and was responsible for Revision Alaska. There's two seasons of that that you can find some documentaries that Paige made and worked on and chronicled. It's so great. It's such great stuff. So that'll be Saturday, April 11th, 1:30 to 3. And then is there going to be a life after it? Are we going to put it up on the KTO site? Or are we going to put it somewhere on YouTube? Where is it going to live after?
Yeah, so KTO is a co-executive producer for this because of their generous donations. They did so many in-kind donations for gear and help with just post-production workflow. So this will be airing on KTOO broadcast at some point. We're working with Kelly on when that's going to come up. And then I'm not sure. After that, it is Folk Fest's film. So it's up to them what they want to do with it, if it has a festival run in the future or if it just lives on KTOO. It's kind of up in the air from here. But mostly just wanted to make sure that we brought it back on the 51st Folk Fest for people to watch.
Well, thank you so much, Paige. Gonna cheese for that. It's going to be so cool to see that film. That's going to be a lot of fun. So, Annie, you're a board member of the Folk Fest. This year is awesome. Like, the lineup is awesome. We have some great guest artists. Give the rundown for those who haven't heard. What's going on? You're even wearing your Willie Carlisle
shirt. I'm wearing my Willie Carlisle t-shirt. This is a really great year. Willie Carlisle actually got to come to Juneau 5 or 6 or 7 years ago and did an At 360 red carpet concert of Boy Howdy Hot Dog, which everyone should check out. He's an amazing songwriter, playwright, theater person, poet, brings together an incredible range of artists. And this year he's going to feature Beth Chrisman playing fiddle with him, our own of Fairbanks in Austin. And he's doing two shows, the main stage Thursday night one, 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock on the main stage on Thursday night, and Sunday at 8 o'clock. But it's going to be theatrical and really exciting, and he might have shipped us some puppets, some life-size puppets.
That's good. Have there ever been puppets?
I think this is going to be a performance unlike anything Juno or this folk festival has ever seen.
Wow.
So prepare yourselves. After that, we've got the featured dance band, the Red Hots. They are an old-time band. They were kind of the guys who were building this tradition, hanging out in the 90s with, Tommy Jarrell. Mm. If you ever hear what old-time means, it doesn't mean old music. It means a specific kind of
style.
Fiddling tradition, kind of like based in Appalachia. So these were the guys who made old-time music cool during their time. And it spurned so many other traditions. It's fronted by a guy named Joe Thrift, who's a fiddle maker based out of North Carolina and writes tunes. And then the guitarist is my banjo teacher and mentor, Riley Bogus, who's an incredible banjo maker. If you've ever seen the movie Cold Mountain, he's the voice of Pangle in it. And he's done a lot of cool projects with Alison Krauss and T-Bone Burnett and toured with Willie Nelson. So
wow.
Just very cool dude, very cool band. They've got two dances Friday and Saturday night at 9 p.m., but they're also doing really rad workshops. I think Riley Bogus's Appalachian traditional folk singing and ballad thing is going to be really cool. But also, Willie's doing a square dance workshop, one called Talking Blues, where he talks about writing folk songs and from that perspective. And then there's also going to be a workshop from our guest dance caller, Connor McGuire, who is a very sweet, funny human who dresses like a lumberjack. I got to go to some of his dances in Bolinas, California, and you'll see him. I'm really afraid he'll come to Juno and never want to leave because this festival is so magic.
Yeah, that's so
great. Are
we
afraid of that, though?
Do we need one more?
We do.
The answer is yes. Yeah.
Always,
we need all the square
always.
Dance
One more
callers.
Banjo, one more square dance caller.
So the festival kicks off on Monday night, right, at the Centennial Hall. And it'll be every night that week, Monday through Friday. And then on Saturday, there's two sessions in the afternoon and the evening. And then Sunday afternoon and evening over at Centennial Hall. The dances are at the Jack, right?
They kick off Thursday night. So they're Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. And it's all kinds of music. Honky-tonk, everything, all kinds.
There's usually
country and Western.
Some, like, rock leaning a little later in the night.
Ah, okay.
Typically,
right.
But, if you can move your feet, you can dance to all of this music, I think.
That's so fantastic. So you want to get yourself out to those dances. And we should mention that KTO has been a partner for the Folk Festival almost since the inception. KTO is about 52, 53 years old. I think we're 52 now. So it's kind of funny they all started around the same time. But you can listen on KRNN if you can't make it down to Centennial Hall. Of course, you should go live in person. And see the acts live down at Centennial Hall.
I don't know, Boston. My favorite place to watch is at home. Or listening in my Subaru, picking people up at the airport. But watching it at home is very fun because you get to see it, but be comfortable.
It's true. You can be in a nice little blankie and have your cocoa and stuff. Yeah, for sure.
And it wouldn't be possible without KTOO.
But you have all these options. You can also stream it. It'll be on the KTO. You just go to kto.org/folkfest. You'll see all the ways to listen or watch if you can't get down to Centennial Hall. And, of course, you can go to akfolkfest.org for all the information on the festival. And the big schedule of events, there's people coming from all over. I saw people on the schedule coming from Portland. There's people coming up all from around the state. There's people coming from everywhere. And there's I think Josh did an interview recently. Josh is the new president of the board, taking over from Andrew Heist, right? And he did an interview with Mike Lane, our morning guy, and he said there's 125 slots, and you had over 200 applications. So do you all figure out how do you decide this madness of scheduling.
It's probably the worst day of the whole festival is scheduling day for the board. So we physically print out every single application that we get, and we sort them based on people's availability. And then we go through, and there's a little bit of a strategy, but not a lot. And we just do the best we can to get as many people on stage as possible, make sure we have some like keystone longtime performing acts that people love to see every year, and then try really, really hard to get new people on every year too.
Right. So like the stalwart, like the cost of living, collect Costa always hosting and performing, right? Those kind of folks. But what's cool is that you also, you don't necessarily, it's not about how musically talented you are per se.
Never.
It's about, you don't listen to the music of the acts, you just choose them based on their application, right?
People are confused every year because it is so accessible, and we're really looking to put people on stage who may have very little experience or tons of experience and put them next to each other and create opportunities for artists no matter where they're at.
And what I love is everyone's lifted up to the same level. Like the main stage is equal treatment across the board. Someone who's been playing for decades is doing it professionally, and then someone who's maybe 12 and going on stage for the first time.
Yeah,
and they're all
so
getting
nice.
The same support, which is really cool to watch.
The family bands are some of my favorites.
Yeah.
Those are really awesome to see. So tell me a little bit, you mentioned a little bit about the workshops. Does one of you want to tell me a little bit more about the workshops? Those happen on the weekend, is that right?
They happen on the weekend starting at 10 a.m., both at the Jack on Saturday and at Centennial Hall in all the meeting rooms.
Okay.
And the workshop schedule is posted online. I wish I could remember them all, but I was looking at the workshop schedule last night, and what a robust year for workshops. It's really cool. And, you know, sometimes the board will recruit subjects and topics for workshops, but as everything in this festival, it's volunteers submitting their own expertise and knowledge and saying, I want to teach a workshop on this.
Wow.
So we never know what we're going to get. And the workshops are wonderful every year. They're free. So talk about all the education and development opportunities for musicians. The workshops run Saturday and Sunday. And there's at least 20, if not more.
Tough choices are going to have to be made.
Because you're in all the different rooms, you got to choose, right?
You got to choose.
You choose your own adventure. Wow.
All kinds of banjo lessons, all kinds of guitar lessons, singing lessons, dance lessons.
That's great.
And there's an instrument swap every year that happens.
That's cool.
So that's always a way to get rid of some old banjos and get some new ones.
That's great. And as Megan mentioned, you can go to akfolkfest.org for that whole schedule of workshops, as well as the schedule for the main stage and everything else going on. I do want to ask, because you are the merch and design queen, that's how you're billed. Tell me a little bit about what we can expect for that, and tell us a little bit about the artist for this year for the poster.
Yeah, the last few years we have been doing a public call for art, which Annie and I have been some of the spearheads on. We're really happy to be doing that. So we get submissions in the fall, and then the board goes through and picks a proposal to move forward with. And this year's artist is Savannah LaCornu from Ketchikan. She's an Indigenous artist and has done a couple really nice gig posters in the past for some local Ketchikan bands, Dude Mountain, some listeners might recognize. And she was selected. It's a beautiful digital painting of musicians in the Northern Lights over a Juneau night scene.
Oh, that's really nice.
So really fun. And then my job as design queen is to figure out how to put that on all the merchandise, which is a good task.
Yeah, and that stuff goes quick. The design.
It does,
The merch goes really fast. And the other thing, Annie, that I just want to mention is we're going to put together a nightlife guide here at KTO, which we do.
Yay!
You used to do.
Yeah.
And what's really interesting is over the years, I've even, there's so many places that music happens. Obviously, it happens on the main stage over at the Folk Festival at the Centennial Hall. But all these places that musicians play, it really becomes like a gig week for people.
And it's not just folk music.
Right.
That's my favorite thing. There are metal bands. There are electronic bands.
There's a hip-hop night on Tuesday.
Which, there's a hip-hop night?
Yeah, which KXLL is co-sponsoring this
year. I love that.
Yeah, so there's just like, it's just spurned this whole thing of like this wonderful week of music.
Yeah, folk music is the people's music, and everybody's invited, and banjos might not be your thing. That's very cool, but how cool that we get to live in Juneau where there's room for so many different genres, different abilities, different levels, and all coming together and celebrating each other.
And you're performing, I would assume you're performing this year?
I'm hopefully going to be dancing as the Mudflat Footers with Dylan Proudfoot and Carter Bancroft. And I'm teaching a clogging lesson on Saturday if my knee cooperates.
Ah, yes, the knees. I can feel that. And Paige, you talked about having music be in your life all the time. Is somebody dragging you into their set this year?
Not that I'm aware of.
Not yet. Now that people are going to hear that you're here, they're going to be like, hey, Paige.
Nope, I had to choose between bringing up camera equipment or a guitar, and I chose camera equipment. So,
yeah, but I think there's guitars
there might
around.
Be, yeah, there might be a guitar I might steal at some point, but we'll see. Anything can happen at Folk Fest. That's the best part. So,
That's so cool. Okay, well, it's the Alaska Folk Festival. It's happening next Monday through Sunday, and it's awesome. There's so many wonderful things that are part of it. You can go to akfolkfest.org to find the full schedule of everything. And also the documentary, 50 Years of Folk Fest, which is premiering tonight at the Gold Town. That's sold out, but you'll also be able to see it next Saturday, April 11th, downstairs here at KTO at 1:30 and 3 o'clock. So come on by and check out the film. Paige, will you be here on April 11th?
I will. I'll be here. I'd love to see everybody.
Yeah. So there's maybe some Q&A that'll happen or something. Perhaps.
Yeah, we could arrange that.
Yeah. Do a little chatting, talk about it. But it's going to be really, really awesome. And then, of course, all next week here on Juno Afternoon, we'll have music. We'll have Willie Carlisle, you were talking about. I don't know if he'll bring puppets, but he's going to be here Thursday on Juno Afternoon. And then Friday, just a reminder, we're going to have the Red Hots downstairs for a live Juno Afternoon. Bring your dancing shoes. We're going to have a little dancing area, and they're going to play some tunes. We'll interview them. We'll talk to the band. It's going to be a lot of fun. AKFolkFest.org. Gwyneth Cheech for being here today. Break a leg tonight with the festival, with the film.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Thank you, Megan.
Thanks, you.
Thank you, Annie. This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. We're going to listen to one of the, godfathers of the folk festival, Buddy Tabor, maybe? We're
going
to listen to a little bit of Buddy Tabor. This is Blinding Flash of Light on Juno Afternoon.
The 60s came, the 60s went, the dreams of peace and love were spent. The right attacked, the left had died, the good Samaritan crucified. Jesus said to love your neighbor, but the rich got richer, wouldn't do you no favor. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing lights. Ronald Reagan headed to college. He took a chainsaw, clear cut the trees, sold a birthright to the Japanese. All we got was computers and TVs, surfing on the internet. Things you've never found out yet. Drowned in the age of information. Whistles with hell from a whole damn nation. Baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. Just as ain't blind, she can see the daylight of reality. How much a lawyer costs and the rich walk free. Ask OJ if you don't believe. You can get away with murder if you're a billionaire. When you got a lot of money, honey, nobody cares. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. This country's starting to remind me of pre-World War Germany. Feel the hate, the fear, no repentance. Got no mercy, got no tears. Lincoln rolls over in his grave. If he could see these Republican senators today. Now, baby, they living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing light. They want to turn this country into Bosnia. NRA right-wing gun freaks. Take the blood of our precious children, turn around and spill it into the street.
masturbating with their gun while they're eating Soldier of Fortune. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing lights. The Russians sell nuclear arms to angry Islamic states. You turn around and tell me that there's hope. You spin back around, say it's not too late. Standing in the shadow of Armageddon, judgment's waiting at the gates of heaven. Now, baby, ain't living right. Well, I'll be one of that blinding flashing lights. Mushroom cloud, desk bright shroud wraps around all of us now. The intensity of radioactive heat melts us right down to our...
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Tongass Federal Credit Union, a member-owned financial cooperative offering checking and savings accounts, loans, and digital financial services. In Juno at 8585 Old Dairy Road in the K Plaza and at tongassfcu.com, federally insured by NCUA.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
You're listening to Community Supported Juno Afternoon on KTOO at 104.3 Juno, 91.7 Juno Ok Bay, and online at ktoo.org. You can also join us on our live stream on KTOO's YouTube, Facebook, and Instagram pages. I'm Boston Christopher. The annual Marie Darlin Prize celebrates an outstanding Juno artist, writer, or performer whose work encompasses a commitment to the region's social or cultural history, community advocacy, or Indigenous identity. The award comes with 5,000 buckaroos, which the recipient can use as they wish. The nomination deadline is May 1st. It's just one of the many things that the Juno Douglas City Museum does, and I'm joined now in the studio by Beth Weigel, the Juno City Museum Director.
Hi, Boston.
Sheesh. And I also have Mandy Malott, President of the Board of the Juno Community Foundation. Wasiti, how are you today, Mandy?
Yes, I'm doing great. Sunny day. Happy to be here.
Excellent. And I have two past recipients. I believe I have the very first recipient of the award, Ernestine Hayes. Gonna cheese. Ernestine, how are you today?
I'm Wasiti. Doing good. Thank you. It's good. Really good.
And then we have Scott Burton, who won the award, was it last year?
2024.
Boy, time goes fast. Scott Wasiti, how are you today?
Thanks for having us, Boston. Good
nice.
To be here.
Thank you so much. This is so great. So, let me first start with this question, and I guess, Beth, you could probably answer this. Who was Marie Darlin?
Marie Darlin was a community member. I was just looking up a few things about her today because we do this in April. We celebrate our winner for the previous year, so 2025's winner, Mr. Shaw, will be celebrated tomorrow at the museum, and her birthday is April 3rd.
Oh, wow.
And she was born in 1925, so she turned 100 last year. I mean, she's not with us anymore, but she was a community member. She was just very dedicated to things about history, and she had a nickname. She was called the Velvet Hammer, so she was soft but yet hard on making sure that people had history right and that things were documented properly and that things were preserved. Like she donated lots of things to the City Museum. She was on the Friends Board. I think she helped start the Friends Board. She helped start the History Grant and a variety of other wonderful programs in the city, and was just a wonderful community member. And one of our other board members, who's also not with us anymore, Mike Blackwell, he wanted to honor who she was and her contributions to this community. And so she had left some bit of money to us, as well as we had other money for these other things at the Juno Community Foundation. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of pulled everything together, and Mike said, let's call it the Marie Darlin Prize, and it's a prize. Like, it's a thing that can not only bring recognition to our wonderful artists and historians and writers and all the different like ways that we celebrate the amazing people in our community, but also to bring recognition to the City Museum as a place that does that work. And so our Friends organization, Friends of the Juneau Douglas City Museum and the Juneau Community Foundation, support that financially. And then we have a little committee that gets together and people get nominated or they apply and decisions are made and people are feted.
Yeah, I love that. And Mandy, tell me a little bit about how the Juneau Community Foundation is involved.
Right. Well, what's fantastic about this is I love that you mentioned Mike Blackwell as well, Beth, because they were classmates, as I understand it, here. And Mike Blackwell was a longtime donor of the Juneau Community Foundation, and in 2018 was being recognized as our Philanthropist of the Year. Mm. And as part of that honor, we raise funds that, during that event and that celebration according to the awardee's desires. So Mike, being the self-effacing friend that he was, he selected this prize, this idea of the Marie Darlin Prize as the focus for his event. And we had a challenge grant that evening, and we raised, I think, $50,000 toward this prize that evening. So it's an honor and a really special thing for the Community Foundation to be involved with the Juneau Douglas City Museum in this way, celebrating our community members.
Yeah, the Juneau Community Foundation, they're on all the time to talk about the various awards that are happening. It's such a great organization that sort of is like a central pool for a lot of organizations in town to handle that money, invest that money wisely, and help get the prizes delivered out, really, right, which is really nice. So that's really great. So when I think the deadline's May 1st, and people nominate folks?
Well, we started off, we had a couple of folks, Mary Lou Madden and Robin Walls, helped create sort of the various parameters for how this award would, you know, be determined, and the requisites, if you will. And at first, we just were going to go with nominations, but we realized that it requires a little bit more sometimes, even if you're nominated. Like, somebody can nominate you, but then we still need to collect, you know, a curriculum vitae or a resume of some sort and other letters of support. So people can self-nominate, I guess, or apply if you want to put it that way. Or you could nominate someone and then we you know, connect with them. Or sometimes they, you know, kind of put the whole thing together, like Mariah Twitchell put together the nomination for Mr. Shaw, who is our 2025 winner and that we'll be celebrating here tomorrow night. And, you know, she not only did the nomination letter, but she, like, probably talked to everybody that he's ever taught violin to, because we had more letters of support for him than anybody else. We were at like 25 letters of support, which you only really need two or three, right, for the you know, application or the nomination. And so it was just really wonderful to receive all of that love for him. And, you know, it was an interesting conversation around, and every time, you know, we go through this, we bring in past winners to have a conversation about who will we choose from our nominees. And we talked a lot about, I don't know, maybe you can remember that conversation a little bit, Ernestine, because, you know, our past winners have works that, you know, you can look to, like a book or a film or a play or whatever, right? And or weaving, like Lily was also a winner. And Mr. Shaw is a musician himself, and he's a teacher. And we just talked a lot about his legacy are these young people who grew up learning to play and have become their own artists in their selves. And, you know, last summer we did this whole exhibit on performing arts and just how ephemeral that is and how it's hard to kind of capture that as opposed to other kinds of art forms like carving or weaving or, you know, films or whatever. So it's just a really interesting thing to think about when you think about an artist and the work that they leave behind, because the work he's left us with is this rich community of people who are musicians and or following their, you know, dreams to become a musician or just contributing in whatever way, you know, as human beings who appreciate music.
It's really interesting to think that your work that you're doing, like Ernestine is a writer and author books and Scott's a filmmaker, but his legacy is people, which is really interesting, that work. I mean, obviously he's a musician himself, but
right. And it's not just that he's teaching them to play the violin. He's teaching them how to be culturally awake in many ways. Like, he's working right now to take a group of students to China, right?
Wow.
And he's taken students to various other places to perform.
That's so great. Well, I want to talk to Ernestine over here. Ernestine, 2021, when you received this award, that was a good year for you because I think you also got the Rasmussen Award that year. 2021 was pretty good. But tell me a little bit about when you heard about this Marie Darlin Prize and what the experience was like for you to sort of accept this award.
Well, it was during COVID.
Yeah.
So I was told that we would get a banquet, but...
She had to share the banquet the next year with Maureen Longworth.
We would have a reception, but... And so I met with the board and the committee and did a reading with them. But what really meant so much to me, besides the honor and being recognized, is I have so many memories of that building that used to be the library. And when I was a little girl, I spent so many afternoons there. And I have such warm memories of the building. And now everything it contains is just so rich and meaningful. So I'm very... attached and invested in everything that goes on there, although it's up the hill, so I don't get there very much. But such an honor, and I love it.
And I know that this it is a prize. It's not a grant. It's not anything like that. And you don't have to say what you're going to do with it. But did you use it for more research on more writing, or what did you do with these funds? Do you remember?
At the time, I was in that purple house that had burnt 1 month after it burnt, after I made one mortgage payment, and it was it went on for years. I ended up having to retire so I could access my retirement. I threw it all at that house. All that money was going to the house, and I, you know, there was nothing for me until I knew it was special, and I said, you know, I'm not going to throw this at contractors or lawyers. Yeah. This is going to be my special.
Yeah, everybody needs their own slush fund, right? You got to have something to be able to.
And so it's even more special for me.
Yeah, absolutely. That's so great. And Scott Burton, 2024 awardee, tell me a little bit about the experience for you. Did you nominate yourself? Were you nominated? How did that process go for you, and what was it like to receive this award?
Yeah, thank you. I believe I was nominated, and it was a wonderful surprise. You know, as you know, sometimes working in the arts, it can be a lot of work, and it's very subjective, and I guess this is any kind of work. And so just for somebody to recognize that they appreciate what you do, you know, and to thank you and honor you, I was... just totally blown away and super thankful for the award. It just felt so good, and you know, to be in the same room with Shankar Acht, Ernestine, and Lily Hope, and you know, Ernestine's been my writing mentor since 2005. I can't remember when I first took one of your writing classes, but it was just a total honor. It just felt so good and like affirming, like, hey. Yeah. You're actually doing the right thing.
You're on the right path.
Sometimes it's hard to tell.
You question a lot.
Oh, yeah.
You definitely question a lot, especially if you're in the middle of a project. I know you've been working on your film and your series that you're going to be making for a number of years now.
Yeah.
And you get inside that, and maybe it's like you can't see sometimes, but it's nice to be reminded that, yes, you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, absolutely. And as for the money, I went to Disneyland.
You did not.
April Fool's. I don't think you went to Disneyland.
One of the really interesting things, too, I think about the process of selection that the committee goes through is that it's been kind of batted back and forth each year. Is are we thinking about like the breadth of the work of someone or a specific project, right?
Mm.
And Ernestine's a good example of, like, she had a breadth of work, right? She had several books, and she'd been, you know, writer laureate and all kinds of, like, contributions in that way. And I think at the time you were recording your book, Two Blonde Indian. Anyway, but, like, Maureen Longworth, she wrote, you know, Blue Ticket was sort of, you know, the piece that she did that was standing as the work for her. Mm-hmm. And Scott's work, he's, you know, got other things still in the hopper, but his work with the schools, and so some of the collaborations that he's done to create film for different projects. And like I said, so it's always an interesting discussion with the committee that comes in, and both Ernestine and Scott were on the committee this past year to select Mr. Shaw. So
it seems like a common denominator is like a community reach with the art. Would you all say that's correct with this award?
Or history, I think, too, yeah.
Okay. Or history,
but
yeah.
That community focus.
Yeah, yeah, the community
the
focus.
The community focus, yeah.
So if you're thinking about nominating someone or applying yourself, keep that in mind. You can also go to the Friends of the Juno Douglas City Museum website. That's fojdcm.org. There is a whole PDF there that describes, like, what the award process is and what you need to do. And but it's pretty simple. There's an application that you fill out, and then obviously they'll ask for more detail. And, of course, you can do that at fojdcm.org. Before we leave the conversation, though, today, Beth, I just want to find out what is else is going on at the museum. You can always go to juno.org/museum to find it out, but what's coming up?
Well, tomorrow, or Friday's first Friday again, and we have the ongoing community 12 by 12 art exhibition, Monochrome in Color, which has got over 60 pieces of art that community members have contributed to this exhibit. Really fun. We have a small exhibit called Slow Beauty in the media room, and that's six beautiful artworks by iconic artists like Sidney Lawrence to living artists like Rob Royce and Jay Crondall to, you know, other artists who have passed through here and not gone too long, but Dale Darmond and Carol Baker. And so just some really wonderful pieces to just enjoy and look at. And we're in association with that exhibit, we're doing Slow Art Day. It's an international recognition, Slow Art Day, so it's a global event, and you participate by looking slowly at a piece of art for maybe 5 minutes, and then we'll have someone come facilitate, which will be our curator, Dara, and then you can discuss that experience. So we have, it's on April 11th, which is Saturday, and we're going to have two sessions, one at 11 a.m. and one at noon. We just want you to call and register. We're going to just have five people at each one, and you just spend some time, you know, enjoying this exhibit. It was also inspired by the book All the Beauty in the World by Patrick Bringley, and that's a wonderful book that just talks about how to slow down and enjoy looking at art, or even if you're out in nature or whatever it is, but it's just a way to, like, ground yourself, I think, by participating in that. And then also April is, of course, National Poetry Month, and we'll be doing on April 18th, the Byrne Thompson Writing Group is going to read their original works just to entertain and inspire everybody, which they do every year, and we're so appreciative that they choose the City Museum to do that. So
that's fantastic.
Those are some of the things going on.
Great. That's the City Museum for the month of April. You can go to juno.org/museum. You can also find more about the Juno Community Foundation over at junocf.org. You can make donations there,
right.
Which is another thing you can do. And then if you want more information on this Marie Darlin Prize and how to apply or nominate someone, go to fojdcm.org. What a pleasure to have you all in today and to talk about this wonderful thing. Thank you so much, Ganesh, for being here.
Ganesh, thank you.
This is Juno Afternoon on KTOO. Here's the Heists from the red carpet stage here in Studio 2K.
Grow ahead. set us adrift out on a raft in the middle of a silver lake. And we float like a bird on the wing, like a melody faint in the back of your mind. Off
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Emil Mackey at Country Financial, offering insurance for home, auto, and business, and life insurance to protect your family in case of death. Located in the Juno Nugget Mall. More information can be found online or by calling 907-500-7017.
Support comes from Juno Compost, recycling the community's food scraps and yard debris into compost since 2017. Serving households, businesses, offices, and more with curbside collection and drop-off options. Online at junocompost.com.
This is Juno Afternoon from your listener-supported public media station, KTO. I'm your host, Boston Christopher. During that break, we were listening to The Heist live in the studio from last year sometime. But I want to mention that The Heist will be playing at the Alaska State Museum this first Friday, 5 to 6 p.m., playing some new cuts off of their EP album that they have coming out soon. I'm joined now in the studio by Dave Ringel, co-chair of the Juno Coalition on Housing and Homelessness, and also Natasha Jackson, from Community Advocacy Manager at Central Council Tlingit and Haida Indian Tribes of Alaska, or Tlingit and Haida, as we sometimes say, who was also a guest on our show yesterday. We had our sexual assault and violence program. If you didn't catch that, it'll be posted on our website soon. You can catch that episode. It's a full hour hosted by Christina Love and Natasha. You were fantastic on that program. Thank you so much for doing that. And Ganesh, welcome in today.
Ganesh.
You're coming in twice in 2 days. I love it. Yeah. And Dave, thank you so much for being here. We're here today to talk about Project Homeless Connect, which is happening next Tuesday, April 7th, at the Elizabeth Perachevich Hall from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. This is the first one of these. I remember having this group on the show a few years ago, but this is the first time it's been happening since 2022. Is that right, Dave?
April 2022. And okay. It was good enough we could hold it outside, which I'm very grateful for Elizabeth Perachevich Hall offering their space.
Yeah,
still. So we have a little more comfortable space right this
yeah,
time.
Yeah, for sure. So tell me a little bit about the Juno Commission that you sit on. The Coalition, sorry, not Commission. The Juno Coalition. Tell me about that.
The Juno Coalition is a group of nonprofit agencies, some religious agencies, and some interested people who work in the field of housing and homelessness. And it's designed to give us a unified voice to speak, to coordinate services, and to speak as a group when issues come up regarding homelessness. There's been a lot of challenges in the last few years. We've got a lot of leadership changing, but we used to sponsor Project Homeless Connect around the point in time count, and it was a way in which people could come in. We found the point in time count this year to be more accurate when we had outreach and we found out where people were camping, reaching them.
But hold on a second. What's the point in time count?
The point in time count happens the last Monday of January nationally. And it's a way to measure homelessness over the United States year to year.
I see. Okay. So that's a national program that we participate in here in June.
As services evolve, they found that anytime there's a change in services, it's good to have a Project Homeless Connect. And we planned this to be April 7th because the warming shelter contract was scheduled to end April 15th. And so we want to make sure we connect the people from the warming shelter, the people from other shelters with homeless prevention services, housing, medical. We're going to do some mental health and other resources while we are providing these. We will know after the assembly meeting on Monday whether the warming shelters contract will be extended or not. It looks like we're going to look for a better solution than the camping that happened, the dispersed camping that happened over the last two summers. We're just...
Yeah, I heard that they were maybe thinking about keeping it open, or was that one of the thoughts?
It is before the assembly.
Okay, so that's happening on Monday.
That will happen on Monday.
Well, you'll know for Tuesday.
We'll know for Tuesday, and so we have JPD is coming in. They're going to have resources on where is appropriate camping and where isn't.
Okay. And Natasha, tell me a little bit about Tlingit and Haida's involvement in Project Homeless Connect.
We got involved when we first were building our community advocacy program. I started to go to Dave. The nonprofits had a meeting every Tuesday. That's where I initially started. And I learned Hazel and Dave have been huge in mentoring me on just around the critical issues around homelessness. And then we got invited to go to the coalition meetings. And it's so important to Tlingit and Haida because so many of our tribal citizens are in that vulnerable population. And so we started partnering, and we learned so much just from attending those meetings, and a lot of the issues that we see in community advocacy are, it's not just people with, it's not just like domestic violence. It's usually like three or four issues, like addiction, homelessness, domestic violence.
Mental health
Yeah,
issues.
Mental health is a huge one.
So they're all kind of connected. So like this day, it's 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. It's on Tuesday at the Elizabeth Peratrovich Hall. There's going to be over 30 community organizations there that people can connect to, and also those people can have conversations with themselves, right?
It's an opportunity both to connect with the homeless and to connect with other agencies and see each other face-to-face in a world that too often is virtual.
Yeah, sometimes it feels like you're working in a vacuum probably, right? Or you're the only ones working on the issue when really it's a lot of folks doing a lot of different things. So what kind of – you mentioned JPD will be there. What are some of the other organizations?
JPD, NAMI.
NAMI, okay.
GHS, JAMI, SEARCH.
AWARE.
Yeah, AWARE is going to be there. Mm-hmm. CERC, the Job Center.
Sure.
And then there'll be about – 7 tribal departments. So GA and TANF will be there, TVR, the Tribal Vocational Rehab, the Community Navigator, CBS Healing Center, Community Advocacy, and Teenage Housing Authority will be there, Alaska Housing, CERC, SEARCH is going to have their mobilization van there. So
oh, nice. Because there are a lot of I know that there's – you've been on the show before, Dave, talking about like, people – housing people. And there's apartments that are available that people can get into. And there's all those different organizations that work out on sale and all those places out there.
One of the things we see is the more organizations coordinate together – the easier it is to find the right services for the people because, you know, we have some people who are seniors and in their fixed income, they might be priced out of an apartment. And that's a different situation than somebody who might be young and have a mental health issue and we need to get mental health treatment.
Right.
And there might be other people who are just temporarily homeless. And we're getting more services for the chronic homeless. And so I have a couple people at the warming shelter who are waiting for treatment. And each one's a little bit different. You know, the one thing they have in common is lack of housing, but there's many different ways to support that. We'll have the food bank. So, you know, there's a little less food security. There's more money to pay the rent. We will also have some neat things. We're going to have a Native dance presentation that will include a remembrance of the lives lost over the past years. We're going to have haircuts and foot care, which are big items for these people. We're going to have a catered lunch at noon to one. And we're hoping that we provide these services and people come down. If you want to look for opportunities and learn about an agency, you could come down and talk to some of them. If you know somebody who's in need of housing, we can start the process. It doesn't happen easily when you need a house. But it could take, you know, sometimes it takes coordinating so we got the right people helping the people.
Yeah, so that's what I wanted to ask next was if people are listening to this who might know someone who is unhoused or homeless, they could sort of direct them to go to Elizabeth Bratchevich Hall on Tuesday and find out a little bit more. Can somebody who isn't homeless come and get information on that day so they can help those in their community, right?
Yeah. Okay. I think there's homelessness affects all of us, whether we're homeless or not. And getting a better idea of what are the resources and how I should respond to people is helpful.
Right, right. Because I know a lot of people instantly put up a wall sometimes, you know. It's like homeless and old people, we don't see them, right? We sort of forget about them and it's somebody else's problem. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting to think about, like, if you as a community member go and you learn what resources are available so that you're more educated and can put yourself out there when you see somebody who's in need and you can direct them to maybe the proper agency or at least a place to start, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to find out, too, if there's an online resource that people can go to. Does the coalition have a website, Dave?
Our website is painfully outdated.
So, I see. Okay. Do you have a Facebook or anything? Do you guys do?
We will be advertising this on Facebook, but a good way to do it is talk to an agency you know, whether it be AWARE, the Glory Hall, Juno Housing First, St. Vincent de Paul, Family Promise. All these agencies help in different ways, and Family Promise is fairly volunteer intensive. St. Vincent de Paul has a combination, but there's a lot of resources. The Glory Hall has volunteers cooking meals at night in different places, and there's some neat activities around this community help. There's a caring canteen.
Yeah.
Out at Chinook Apartments by, Aldersgate Church. And it's, I think, a combination of six different churches that each take a Tuesday night. And they just provide meals in an area that's been identified as a food desert.
And Natasha, at ClinkettandHyda.gov, what tab should we be looking for if we wanted to get more information?
If you want to get more information, you could email me at CAP, at ClinkettandHyda.gov.
Dot gov.
Email.
Because they have the newer website, Clinkett and Hyda, which is easier to remember than the old one.
Yeah, they could definitely email me and call me at 463-7305, and we'll answer any questions that anybody might have.
Okay.
But we hope that we get to see everybody out, you know, even if you're looking for a resource, right, Dave?
Yep.
Yeah, absolutely. It's Project Homeless Connect. It's happening next Tuesday, April 7th at Elizabeth Bratchevich Hall from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. If you need more information, email Natasha at cap@clinkettandhyda.gov. That's the best thing to do for today. Thank you so much, Ganachish, for being here. I really appreciate it.
Ganachish.
Koyama.
That will do it for today's Juno Afternoon, local stories, local connections. Reminder to mark your calendar, join us in a live studio audience special Juno Afternoon on Friday, April 10th. The show will feature the guest dance band of the folk festival, the Red Hots. Bring your dancing shoes. Arrive by 2:45 in the studios downstairs here at KTO next Friday, April 10th. Juno Afternoon airs Wednesday through Friday at 3 p.m. right here on KTO, Juno 104.3 and KAUK, Juno Akbay 91.7. I'm Boston Christopher, producer and host of the program, with help today from Aaron Tripp. Gunath Cheesh!